From 9 to 5 Mac, Brazil and Poland, this is Stack Trace, episode number 100.
Woo!
Woohoo! Wow. Thank you.
We made it, Rambo. We made it to episode number 100. How does it feel?
It feels great. Everything is new now. Everything has changed. I love this number. I know it's like, it's just a number, right? But it is a big milestone in the podcasting world to hit episode 100. And here we are.
Yeah, it is really just a number, but milestones are always so nice to celebrate, I think, because it's also a really nice opportunity to kind of look back at what you've done up until that point and to kind of reflect a little bit and to plan, like, what are things going to be like going forward. And 100 is such a nice round number. And yeah, it's going to be nice to talk about what has happened kind of for us during these 100 episodes, and also to talk a little bit about the future, because everything kind of aligned pretty perfectly for this episode in that we're also going to do our poker for next week's Apple event.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we did everything perfectly, right? We started bi-weekly and then we moved to weekly episodes at the right time just so that it will line up with today.
Exactly.
That was our plan all along.
It was all planned. We've been coordinating with Apple to sync it all up until this episode.
Yeah, exactly.
So before we talk about what we've been up to, like up until this point during the entire run of Stack Trace, and before we dive into the rumors and our predictions for next week's Apple event, what have you been up to during the past week?
I've been playing around with WidgetKit.
Ooh, nice. Yeah, I saw you posted an article about that. That's really interesting.
Yeah, but I've been playing around with WidgetKit on macOS.
Yeah.
Which I think many people haven't done yet. And it was kind of scary. Like, every piece of documentation you look at is related to iOS. But at the same time, macOS has gained the same widgets as iOS with Big Sur. And Big Sur includes WidgetKit, and you can write these new widgets for macOS Big Sur. In fact, it's not just that you can write them, it's that you have to if you've had widgets in the past. Because differently from iOS, Big Sur won't even show the, quote, legacy widgets. So if your app has a widget at all, you have to write a WidgetKit version for it.
Yeah, that's really interesting that they're so aggressive with not maintaining backwards compatibility in this case. And one thing that it got me thinking about when you mentioned that when you searched for instructions and documentation and examples around WidgetKit for macOS, all you got was iOS documentation. It kind of reminds me of whenever you search for NSView anything, your search engine will always suggest to you, did you mean UIView?
Yeah, if you search for NS anything, basically it will suggest the UIKit version. And this is something, I mean, we always complain about Apple's documentation. I think they've improved quite a bit this year, but something that I still feel like could be improved a lot is explaining the differences between platforms when it comes to these shared technologies, and also maybe even having like separate documentation, because it's quite different on the Mac in terms of not exactly the way you write the widget itself, which is pretty much the same as it is on iOS, but how it behaves and how you test it and how you run it, install it, and all of those things. So I think that sort of stuff should be documented separately per platform.
Yeah, that seems like a good idea. And another thing that I've been running into around these technologies with Swift UI is there are a fair amount of differences when it comes to the APIs themselves. And some of it is like this kind of magic under the hood functionality where you just say you want a list, and Swift UI will render the appropriate list on, you know, on an iOS app, on a Mac app, on tvOS, and so on. And that is nice to an extent, but that kind of magic under the hood also kind of gives you a bit of unpredictability in how things will look, especially if you want to customize things. But the other aspect of that is that there's a large number of modifiers that are platform specific. And I've found myself having to like create stub versions of those where, you know, instead of actually doing the functionality, for example, adding a drag gesture, which is not available on tvOS, to just like write that same modifier, but just not, it doesn't do anything, right? Mm-hmm. And that is kind of an interesting trade-off that they've chosen there in the API design, where if you wanted to make something completely cross-platform, maybe you would have implemented those modifiers as those kind of non-operations in the official API, just to make the code completely cross-platform, but instead they've chosen to make them platform-specific, which I kind of understand, but it just makes writing cross-platform code using these technologies a bit more difficult.
Yeah, in this case, it's not even cross-platform, but it is for the Mac. And one example, and this is the reason behind me writing the post that I wrote this morning, was that the way to configure widgets that are written with WidgetKit is by using intents, which I find a weird choice. Like, why do I use intents to configure something?
But NS user activity, all the things, right?
Yeah, in this case, it's intents, all the things. But anyway, so the documentation tells you to write an intents extension for your app, which will be used to handle the widget configuration intent in the case where the values you're going to show to the user are dynamic, which is exactly the case for AirBuddy. I want to let the user pick which devices show up in the widget for each given widget size, because they might have lots of devices, like myself. Like, the small version of the widget only shows 4 devices, just like the one on iOS that Apple made. So I want to let the user pick which devices show up there. And to do that, I can like list the devices in the intent definition file. I don't know the devices, so I have to pick the option that they are dynamic. And in order for the app to provide those dynamic values, it needs some code at runtime to do that. And it goes in an intents extension, which, again, why? Like, it's so weird. If I want my widget to be configurable, I have to create an intents extension? Like, it's so weird.
Do you feel like this maybe has something to do with future system integrations? Like,
yeah, very likely.
Integrating with Siri or integrating with shortcuts or anything else that is like powered by intents and those sorts of things?
Yeah, there's probably something going on there where there's more to it than we know right now. And that's why it seems like an odd choice right now. But anyway, so I checked the documentation and it was explaining how to create the intents extension. And I went file, new targets, and picked macOS. And I searched for intents and nothing came up.
That's a great sign.
Yeah. So there isn't an option to create an intents extension for a Mac app in Xcode, but there is for an iOS app, but I can't embed it in the Mac app. So if you are listening and you're adapting your iOS app to the Mac with Catalyst, you're going to be fine, because a Catalyst app is an iOS app, so it's going to include the intents extension thing. So if you are doing something like that, don't worry, it's going to work fine. But AirBuddy is an old school app. It's an AppKit app. So in the end, what I ended up doing, at first I thought it was not possible on the Mac, but then I noticed that the built-in apps such as Reminders and things like that, which are not Catalyst, some of them are, but Reminders is not, it does include an intents extension, and it does let the user configure the widget. So basically what I've done is something I've done before, which is to create your own Xcode template, which you can do. I'm not sure how many developers are aware of that, but you can create your own Xcode templates. So I basically copied the iOS intents extension template from within the Xcode SDK, and copied it to the user library developer Xcode template, something like that, folder, and tweaked it a little bit so that it would be a Mac target instead of an iOS target, and it worked. So
that's
I
awesome.
Guess they forgot to include it in there. I don't know what's happening. And I even mentioned that, like, if you're going to submit your Mac app to the Mac App Store, maybe it would be rejected because it's not like a known extension type. But maybe because of Catalyst, their system is already accepting that. So I don't know. Don't do this. Don't try this at home.
Well, that's a very, very Rambo-like way to build this thing. It's like to figure out that it actually is possible and then just kind of make it happen by copying those things over and just trying it, right? Because it's another one of those things where so much of these systems are shared between these platforms. So often all you have to do is try it. And sometimes you might need to, you know, call some private APIs or something on the Mac, which you could always do if you are not in the App Store and if you're okay with that, like you're doing in AirBuddy, for example, and make these things happen.
Yeah, and in this case, it's even simpler because it's not even using private API. The Intents framework is public on the Mac. And the Intents extension doesn't link against like AppKit or UIKit or anything like that. It's just
completely standalone.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. So, and it's very simple. Like, it's a very simple extension. It basically just fetches data, converts it into the objects that the intent wants, and returns that. So it's fairly simple.
That's super cool. So we'll definitely leave a link in the show notes to your article about how you made this happen so people can read up on all the technical details.
Absolutely. So, John, do we have another gaming corner this week?
Of course we do. It wouldn't be a modern Stack Trace episode without John's gaming corner, right?
Nice.
I mean, you listeners, you just have to tell me if you get bored of the segment and then I will stop. But if not, then I'll keep going. I think it's an interesting thing to take a look at because I am writing this game. I am working on it every single week and a lot of kind of interesting decisions and problem solving is coming out of it. And one thing I want to talk about this week is kind of trying to be a little bit pragmatic around how you design your model data. So in Swift, we talk a lot about, you know, when we're designing our models, we talk about trying to make ambiguous or invalid states impossible to represent using the type system.
Yeah.
So one example of that, for example, is let's say you have a model which has two variants. Like it can either be in a partial state or in a complete state. For example, you might have like a list of items and there you have partial models, which only have, let's say, a title and an ID. And then when you load more of that data, you get a complete model, which has all of the information in that model. And you might represent that using an enum that has two cases, like a partial case where you have an associated value with the partial data. In case it's just two values, they can just be right there in the enum case. So it can be ID colon and then the ID type and same thing for the title. And for the complete case, you could actually have the complete model there as an associated value. So that's a very common way of structuring a model like that, because that way, when you have a partial model, you are guaranteed that you only have the partial data and vice versa for the complete one. So the type system is helping you validate your code. So you always have to switch on that enum and handle the two cases. So I tried to do that kind of solution as much as possible and to really make my data as unambiguous and as clear and as, you know, much validated by the compiler as I possibly can. But in the game development, I ran into an interesting kind of problem here and something that I had to think about, where I have these characters in the game that you can move around the board. They're like board pieces, right? They're units. Mm-hmm. And all of them, except for one, are just standalone characters where they can just occupy one space on the grid at a time. However, there is one special unit, and that's the transport ship. So we have boats in the game, like ships that you can go with on water, and one of them you can load other characters into. And here you might start to see where the problem is when it comes to the model data, because if all other characters make the assumption that they can only be one character at one grid tile at a time, then all of a sudden here you have one that can have many other characters kind of inside it, it's carrying, right?
Mm-hmm.
So my initial idea on this was to use this enum approach that I talked about before. So I have, for example, a standard or default unit as one case and like a transporter as a second case, and then include an array of other characters that are being carried by that transporter. However, that made it quite complicated in the rest of the logic. So every time I had to switch on that enum, you know, and this is, we have to remember, it's just one out of like 12 different characters that has this logic. So paying that price for only one small subset of all of my models was felt kind of wrong. And at the same time, I could have added like convenience APIs to look into that enum and make it easier to like retrieve information. But those would have been optionals in most of the case. So it wouldn't really have given me much anyway. So I decided to kind of go the pragmatic approach here and to design something that was maybe a little bit less swifty or less elegant. And that would be to simply store this data in a separate location, to have like a registry of transporter carried units and to store those separately and then let my standard data model not have to be concerned with this information at all. And I just found that was kind of an interesting exercise that I went through where I started reaching for the Swift type system because that's what I am used to. But I realized that that had too much overhead in this particular case. And I ended up going with a kind of more simple solution, which was essentially just a separate dictionary where I stored this information. And I think that's just something that's good to keep in mind when we're designing our model code and working with Swift in general is that the type system is amazing and we should use it as much as possible. But it's also okay sometimes to circumvent that or to go with another kind of solution that might not give us that compile time guarantee and be as elegant because we do have some optionals or introduce some potential ambiguity, but it might be the most pragmatic solution.
I'm a huge fan of dictionary lookups.
You are?
Yeah, I think they're great. Great performance, right? I think you're right in that case. And it also, your description of the problem reminded me a lot of when I was looking into these glitches in old games like Super Mario World or something like that, where most glitches that I've seen are related to Yoshi. Because it's like a weird thing and they had to do lots of hacks. And of course, there were many, many, many more limitations back then as to what could be done. So they have so many hacks in order for like Yoshi to carry Mario in different states and the tongue can grab stuff. And there are lots and lots of glitches that can happen. And it's the classic example of like, you design something with all of these cases in mind, but there's always that one exception that trips you up. And in the case of AirBuddy early on while working on version 2, it was, every device must have a battery, right?
Right.
Wrong. because of some of the things I'm doing with grouping the devices based on what they're connected to, not every device has a battery. Because you can have a desktop Mac, which doesn't have a battery. You can have an Apple TV, which doesn't have a battery. So, yeah, I was wrong. And I had to work around that exception there. Because, yes, the vast majority of devices I have to deal with have batteries, but some of them don't. And, and that's another thing. Like, and this was back in early first version of AirBuddy days. Every device has one battery. That's also wrong because some devices have more than one battery. Like the AirPods, there's the battery for the case, the battery for the left, and the battery for the right, but it's just one device. So, yeah, this is something that it's impossible to predict in the beginning what it's going to be, but I think it's important to figure that out as soon as possible and not try to like make it fit with your current abstraction and actually realize that you have to change something and do it right now because it's always easier to do it right now than do it later.
Right. Or another option like the one that I went for was to keep my model the same and keep the model clear and easy to use for the vast majority of cases. Mm-hmm. And then to introduce a second storage, like a registry for that specific edge case. And that's another solution that I also think is perfectly valid is that, you know, if you have some specific data that is only needed in a subset of your application to, you know, you don't need to have everything stored in one single data model.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great solution.
All of this kind of reminds me of our friend Dave DeLong's website, Your Calendrical Fallacy Is. Have you seen this website?
That's awesome. Yeah, I love that site.
Yeah, we will put a link in the show notes to it. But it's awesome because it's all about, like you said, like if you make the assumption that all devices just have one battery, I think a lot of people, ourselves and everybody included, makes a lot of assumptions about dates and calendars. And that's, you know, one of Dave's passion subjects. So he made a website about it. And it's so much fun to read through those things. And it really breaks your assumptions a lot.
My favorite one from that, just to make our listeners more enticed to check it out, is that every day starts at midnight.
Right.
That's not true. And if you want to learn more, check out the website. It's awesome.
Yeah, it really is. Cool. So now let's get started with our two main topics. And for this episode, we're first going to do our keynote poker game, which we always do before an Apple keynote event. And of course, Apple is holding their September event on September 15th, which is, as we record, in 1 week. So that's going to be a lot of fun to speculate about what we think Apple will do next week. We also want to use this opportunity that we have 100 episodes now of Stack Trace to talk a little bit about our personal milestones since episode one, and to kind of look back at, you know, how we have evolved and how what we've been up to during these 100 episodes. So that's going to be a lot of fun, I think. But first, let's take a very quick break and thank this episode's sponsor. This episode of Stack Trace is brought to you by Concepts. Sketch ideas, create mind maps, design layouts, and communicate visually on an infinite canvas with the Concepts app. That's available on a wide range of platforms, including both iOS and Android. Draw with fluid, pressure-sensitive brushes using designer colors that make every sketch look professional. Concepts Vector Ink is a powerful tool for creativity. It lets you move your ideas around the canvas for brainstorming, to explore design iterations efficiently, and it lets you enjoy endless editability of your work. You can drag and drop images, vector objects, PDFs, and other assets straight into the canvas as well for fast concept work, and you've also got precision tools like grids, line and shape guides, and real-world measurements, which all make all sorts of design work much simpler. You can also use Concepts to collaborate with both clients and teammates using the app's automatic presentation mode, and pair it with virtual conferencing clients like Zoom or Reflector for easy virtual brainstorming, collaboration, and whiteboarding. Then deliver your best ideas in flexible formats, including PDF and SVG, and work seamlessly with software like AutoCAD and Adobe Creative Cloud. Try Concepts today by searching for Concepts on the App Store or by using the link that's in the show notes. Thanks a lot to Concepts for sponsoring this episode of Stack Trace. All right, Rambo, so now it's poker time.
Yay.
So, do you want me to explain the rules? Do you want to explain the rules? What? How do you want to do it?
I need you to explain the rules to me because I always forget them, so please.
All right, let's do it. So the Apple Keynote Poker is kind of our take on the classic kind of prediction episodes that a lot of podcasts do before each Apple event. But we put a little fun twist on it, which is that we play poker about what we think that our predictions are. So we will do 5 rounds where we will each pick one pick from a list that we've prepared in advance. And we will then bet between 1 to 5 points on it. And we can bet either plus points or minus points. So I guess the range goes from -5 to +5. And then the other person can choose to either bet with or against the other person. So as an example, let's say that Rambo says that next week, I think that Apple will introduce a new car. And he bets 5 points on that. I don't think Rambo will actually make that bet. But, you know, we can use it as an example. And then I say that I bet against that. That means that if Apple does not show a car, I get 5 points and Rambo loses 5 points and vice versa. If they do it, then Rambo gets those points and I lose those points. So was that making the rules clear enough for you, Rambo?
Yes. And we can also fold, right?
You can also fold, yeah. So you can also decide not to bet at all if you are not the player whose turn it is, that is. Because you wouldn't fold on your own turn, would you?
No, I wouldn't.
All right, so I think, how about you get the honor of doing the first pick?
Yeah, I think it's fair, right? I won the last one.
Yeah, exactly. Well, winner should start, right? That's how the old saying goes.
All right. So I am going to go with one which I'm fairly confident in, but I still think it is a little bit risky. And this is going to be that there will not be a new iPhone announced during this event.
All right, starting with a big one.
This is like many people, if you haven't been following the news lately, you're probably like what? No iPhones? And this is with the information we have on Tuesday the 8th at like 4 p.m. Brazilian time. So I don't know, maybe something changed, but Apple announced that the iPhones would be late this year, and they announced this event for September 15th, which is next week. And after that, lots of news sites, of course, started reporting it as the iPhone event, which is usually the September event. But right after that, Mark Gurman posted that he wasn't expecting iPhones at this event, and that the iPhones would be announced in October. And at the same time, lots of publications started correcting their stories about this, which makes me think this is quite likely, actually. And I know it's kind of odd, but we're in an odd year, so yeah. I think anything is possible. And we shouldn't forget that it's not uncommon for Apple to have an event in September and another one in October. And it was traditionally September for iPhones and Apple Watch and things like that, and October for Macs and more pro-related stuff. But maybe this year they are reversing it? I don't know. So, yeah, and I'm gonna go with a +4 on that one.
So you're betting 4 points that there will be no iPhones at the event.
Yes.
All right. That's a bold bet, but I am with you on your thinking. And I also think, like you said, like the rumors and the predictions from other people, including Mark Gurman, really line up to this as well. And it would make sense because we've heard for a while now that the iPhones are quote unquote delayed, right? Which is always funny when you're talking about a product that hasn't been announced yet. Like, how can it be delayed? But we've come to expect new iPhones every September. And while some iPhones, like the iPhone X, did launch a little bit later in the year, that's been the common expectation. So, yeah, I think it would make sense if Apple has a strong event planned for next week, they could still kind of get away with it from the expectation perspective, especially if they follow it up with an iPhone event within the next couple of weeks or something like that.
Yeah.
So I am actually going to go ahead and bet with you then, and also say that 4 points on no iPhones at the event.
I was too convincing.
You were too convincing. That's typical you, Rambo. So convincing.
All right, your turn.
So I'm going to bet Xcode on iPad.
No, what? I'm joking. You almost got me.
I'm always betting on Xcode on iPad, right?
Yeah.
All right. So what am I going to pick? Well, you know what? I'm going to go with a little bit of a meta pick here. And Apple, during their announcement of this event, they showed a lot of like AR things, and there have also been some AR tags found in the HTML of the page that you shared with me, Rambo. So I'm going to bet that there will be some sort of AR live experience during the event, so that there will be something involving AR that we as the watchers that we can use. Like, for example, there will be some feature where you can click a link in Safari or something and watch some form of AR thing going on at the event. Is that too ambiguous or is that clear enough?
No, I think that that's pretty clear. And I think you're deriving this from the fact that in the pre-event page on their website, there's this 3D looking logo of Apple, and you can tap it on an iOS device and see it in AR, in 3D, and it's kind of cool. So in the title attribute for that link, it says something like, watch the event in AR or something. So
exactly.
Yeah, it is interesting that they are saying that. It could be just like they meant like watch the logo in AR or something. But yeah, so this would be something like, I can watch the event in AR, or like during the event, maybe as they announce the products, they will put like a link in the video and you can tap and see the product in quote real life in AR or something like that.
Something like that.
That would be kind of cool. Yeah,
that would be really, really cool, and really augments, as it's called, augmented reality, the experience. And it would just be a fun little gimmick also during the event. So let's hope that something like that happens. So I'm going to bet 3 points on that.
Cool. And I am going against.
All right. Interesting. What's your reasoning behind that? Because there's a lot of evidence for this.
I don't know. I just think that I don't think they would do something like that. I don't know. It's just I think it might be one of those things where it's just a little gimmick before the event and it doesn't really turn into anything.
All right.
And I also want to make the game more interesting.
Yeah, that's true. That's good. You got to do it for the game.
Yeah.
All right, Rambo. So what's your second pick?
So we've seen in some metadata in the YouTube page for today's video. It's very meta, this episode.
Oh, yeah. We're all about the meta here on Stack Trace.
Exactly. So there's a list of keywords for the video, which is on YouTube. So on YouTube, when you're going to do a live event, you put like keywords and Apple puts keywords in there. And one of the keywords is Apple Watch Series 6, which doesn't exist yet. So I think it's fairly likely that we're going to see, it's pretty much confirmed that we're going to see an Apple Watch Series 6 during this event. But that's too obvious, so I'm not going to bet on that specifically. I'm going to be a little bit more specific here, and I'm going to say that this new Apple Watch that they announced, the Series 6, so the next generation Apple Watch, is going to have blood oxygen monitoring.
All right, interesting. That's one of those like science fiction features that we've heard about for a while, like being able to measure the blood using lasers or something like that. Because I assume this will not work by you punching your skin with a little needle that's under the Apple Watch. Like every time you put it on, it hurts.
Hopefully
I don't think
not.
That's how it's going to work. So this is going to be interesting to see if they've pulled off something like this.
Yeah, there are those little clamps they use at hospitals and things like that that measure your blood saturation. But I think their principle is that they shine some sort of light through your finger, and that's where they can measure it. But I've also read something about like that technically with the current hardware on the Apple Watch, it would be possible, maybe. But maybe they have like some sort of special sensor, or they did some special calibration or something like that, where they are going to be confident that they can get a good read on that. And also, I think it's fair to assume that Apple would not release a feature like this if they weren't confident to the point where they can get official like certification for it from health authorities. So I think even though it could be technically possible right now, I think they would only do it when it's like, quote, perfect. So I'm going to do a, let's go with a 5. Let's be bold on this one.
Really? So confident in this. Wow. Has there been any sort of like real evidence or leaks around this?
Would I tell you if there was?
You see, this is why this game is unfair.
In all honesty, and to be fair here in the game, I'm not going to omit any information. There has been reports of this. I don't remember. I think something on 9to5 Mac from Felipe, maybe. Or maybe it was something from German. I don't remember. But I have seen rumors about this feature.
All right. Interesting. You know what? Still, I think I'm going to go against you on this one. Again, we're trying to make the game interesting here. but also because I just haven't seen so much about this to feel so confident about it. And also, I feel like this might be more of an iterative year for the Apple Watch hardware. Last year, there was the always on screen being introduced and things like that. So I feel like this year we might just see like a little bit of a spec bump. We might see better battery life and things like that. So I'm not sure if like this kind of advanced sensor is ready for this year. So I'm just going to go against for that reason.
Oh, this game is getting interesting.
It really is. All right. So for my next pick, speaking of interesting, let's go with AirTags.
Ooh.
We've heard a lot about AirTags, including in different YouTube videos being published by Apple and things like that. Like there's been a lot of evidence that there are AirTags and they're apparently ready. They've been ready for a while. They didn't launch it because, well, not a lot of people are leaving their house or haven't left their house in months. And now in large parts of the world, at least, the quarantines are kind of, you know, not over, but it's less severe than it used to be. So perhaps Apple feels like they can now actually announce AirTags because some people are leaving their houses under different circumstances and consult your local authorities and so on and so forth.
I lose stuff in my house, so I need this right now.
Yeah, right. You accidentally put your keys in the fridge and all that stuff, right?
Exactly.
When you're grabbing a midnight snack. Why would you have your keys when you're grabbing a midnight snack? Anyway, I think I will bet 4 points on this. That AirTags will be announced officially.
Oh man, this is a hard one. So what I'm thinking is, of course, we know, and it's funny to listen to like Upgrade, where they always talk about AirTags and they always say the same thing, that like, we know this product exists. And I was actually the first one to report on this product back in, I think, April 2019, something like that.
Yeah.
So we know it exists. It's shown up in official Apple YouTube video, which they took down afterwards. So it's there. It's a thing. What I'm not so sure about is whether this would be the event where they announce them.
Right.
Because this could very well be something like, if they're holding an event, if I'm right about no iPhones, I mean, if we are right about no iPhones at this event, and they do an iPhone event in October, AirTags could be a part of the iPhone event. But all of that said, I'm gonna go with you.
All right. The reason I have around this is that I feel like this might be like a wearables slash accessory focused event with the Apple Watch, with AirTags. Maybe we'll see AirPods and things like that, like we're probably going to bet on in future rounds here. Because rumor has it that we'll see a lot of different iPhone models, and there's also the Apple Silicon Max on the horizon and things like that. So it feels like one of those things that Apple would like to, quote unquote, get out of the way, right?
Yeah.
And that's why I'm betting on it for this event.
Cool.
So round three, what do you have for us, Rambo?
So I'm going to pick an interesting one, and also moving a little bit away from hardware specific things. I am going to bet that they are going to announce the long rumored, I mean, not that long, because I think it was this year that it showed up. So the semi-long rumored fitness video guided thingy. So
is that the official name?
Exactly. So I'm going to, be more specific, actually, I don't want to be too specific in this particular bet, but I'm not sure if it's going to be like an app or a feature within an existing app, like the existing fitness app on iOS, but it's going to be something from Apple where you can watch workout videos and do them at home, and it's going to have some sort of integration with the Apple Watch where you can like track your progress and see how you're doing and things like that. So not sure if it's going to be like a separate app, maybe it will be, or if it's going to be a feature within the existing workout app.
So just to clarify the bet here, it doesn't have to be a separate app, but it has to be workout videos. Does it have to be a subscription, or can it just be a free feature in the fitness workout app or something like that?
I am not betting on whether this is a service or not. It could be free, it could be both free with a paid tier or something, but I'm betting on the feature itself.
Okay, so workout videos that you can follow along with at home. That's the feature.
Exactly. Yeah, basically. Yeah.
And how many points?
Let's go with 3 for that one.
Okay, I'll match that bet here as well. So I'll bet with you 3 points also on this. I think this would make sense given that this is a somewhat workout focused event if it's going to be about the Apple Watch, which always has a lot of workout related features. So yeah, I think that would make sense.
Yeah, so I think we're going to be both right there.
Yeah, let's hope so. So I'm also going to stick with the software focus here. And I'm actually going to make a little bit of a bold pick here. Mm. And that is that the release dates of Apple's new operating systems will be revealed. Now, this is a risky pick because if this is not going to be about the iPhone, then announcing the release date of iOS 14 will be a little bit strange, right?
Yeah.
Because then they're kind of also announcing when the new iPhones will be available, I guess. Well, maybe not.
Not really, because, and this has been a discussion in many circles. about how the operating system relates to hardware release. And I think the opposite is way more true than this. Like, they can't release the new hardware without releasing the new operating system first, but right. They can very well release 14.0 and release the new hardware on 14.1. Like, that's perfectly exactly. possible. So I don't think that's too crazy of an idea.
Exactly. And I'm also thinking, if there will be new Apple Watches, they probably need the new version of WatchOS. And the new versions of WatchOS are probably only compatible with the new version of iOS, right? And then you go on from there. macOS Big Sur is a little bit more of a question mark, but what they typically do is that when they announce the exact release dates of iOS and WatchOS and tvOS, then they say, and macOS Big Sur will be available later in the fall, for example.
Yeah.
So I'm not necessarily betting on that there will be exact release dates for every single new operating system.
At least one of them.
And I'm betting that in general, they will talk about it and they will announce some form of, you know, when are they going to be available? That's what I'm betting on.
Yeah. And again, for people who are new here, everything we're talking must appear during the event video. So it could be a presenter saying it, or it could also be just in a slide.
Yeah.
So, but it can't be like a press release or anything like that. It has to be in the event.
That's right. Exactly. It needs to be official in the event, either on the slides or spoken. So I'm going to bet on the new OS reveal. Let's give it 3 points.
All right. This is another tricky one, but I have to bet with you on this one because... Yeah, I think it's very likely that it's going to happen.
All right. So that's round 3. Now let's move on to round 4. What's your fourth pick, Rambo?
So I'm going to do something a little bit different, but there have been rumors about it. And I think it's likely that it's going to happen. I think Apple will be announcing a new Apple Watch, but it's not the Series 6 Apple Watch.
Ooh.
I think they're going to announce a more affordable version of the Apple Watch, but it's not going to be like taking the Series 4 and like just lowering the price or something, or lowering the price of another version, because currently they offer the Series 3 at a discounted price. So that's my bet, that there's going to be a new, more affordable version or model of the Apple Watch. And it's not going to be like, oh, the Series 6 is also available in like this entry model. No, it's going to be a separate model of the Apple Watch, like the Apple Watch SE or something.
That is a very, very interesting pick. Where are you getting this from?
So this is based on a report from Mark Gurman, where he mentioned something to this effect. And it's also just like, it makes sense in my head, I guess. That's all I can say about it. But yeah, I think it's fairly likely that it's going to happen. And also, and of course, now I'm justifying it too much, so you're just going to bet with me. But Series 3 Apple Watch is getting old. And I think it was the last model to be 32-bit. So the Series 4 and beyond, they are 64-bit. Well, kind of. There's some stuff in there, but basically they're 64-bit. And also, it was the last one with the old style design language, so without the rounded corners on the screen and things like that. So I think Apple wants to get rid of it, but they don't want to lose having a more affordable Apple Watch for people who don't want to pay the price of the high-end one.
And can't the Series 4 fit that slot?
They're not manufacturing the Series 4 anymore. So I think, yeah, I don't think they would do that. But just to clarify here, if it ends up being like the same hardware as the Series 4, but with another name, I get the point.
Right. It needs to be a name change and needs to be marketed and shown as an explicitly new model.
Exactly. Like, it can't be, oh, and we are also reintroducing the Series 4.
Reintroducing the Apple Watch Series 4 with one of those videos, right? We designed the Series 4 to be great as it used to be, but now it's coming again.
Yeah, so since this is a little bit of a crazier one, I'm going to give it 2.
2 points. And I am going against you on this one, actually. I don't think this sounds likely at all, which, you know, it, I might be completely wrong, but it seems like Apple is fairly happy so far keeping the older version. The fact that they're not manufacturing the Series 4 anymore, that is giving this rumor more credibility, I think. But I still think that they would be happy to just introduce a Series 6 and keep the Series 5 as the quote-unquote lower-end model. And maybe they have been able to, you know, advance the manufacturing enough to lower the price, or maybe they're taking a hit on the margins or something like that. But yeah, I would not bet on a new Apple Watch model like that. But, you know, we'll see what's going to happen.
Yeah. So what's your next pick?
So I'm going to return to the AR theme that I started with. And I'm not going to bet on an AR-focused hardware device from Apple, but I am going to bet on that LiDAR makes its way to more iPad models. So either the iPad Air or the iPad Mini or the standard iPad or whatever they will call it, like a lower-end iPad that is not the iPad Pro, will gain LiDAR functionality. Because it seems to me like this is a big step forward for AR, and Apple wants to keep advancing AR in general. And it's also likely, I think, that we will see LiDAR being introduced in some of the new iPhones that are coming up later this fall. But I think the iPad Air will also get it, just to get that kind of across the board in the iPad lineup.
So they will announce some new version of the iPad, which is not an iPad Pro, and it will include a LiDAR camera.
Exactly.
Cool.
And it doesn't have to be like a new model or something. It can just be like the iPad Air gains it, or the iPad Mini gets it, or something like that. Like, it can be a spec bump, but it should include the LiDAR sensor.
Cool.
And I'm going to bet two on that as well. I'm not super confident, but I think it kind of makes sense from what they've been doing.
Okay. So canceling out the previous bets, I'm going to go against it.
All right. Interesting. So you don't think that LiDAR will make its way to other iPads?
I think it's a little bit too early for that. I think we're going to first see it in some iPhones.
Yeah.
That's what I'm thinking. But I'm not betting on that.
Right, right. So speaking of bets, what's your final pick?
So for my final pick, I am going to follow up on the iPad theme. And I am going to pick that there will be a new iPad Air announced. And it's going to have the same design language as the latest iPad Pros. So no home button and rounded corners on the screens. And just to make it specific, it has to be an iPad Air. So it can't be an iPad Mini or an iPad nothing. It has to be the iPad Air.
It has to be specifically called iPad Air.
Exactly.
All right. Interesting. That's a very specific bet, Rambo. Whenever Rambo makes a specific bet, you just know that he has some kind of information that he's not sharing.
Well, I can tell you I don't, but you're not going to believe me.
Exactly. So how many points are you betting on that?
Let's go with 3 on that one.
All right. So I think I'm going to go with you on that one. I think it does make sense. The design language has been available now for 2 years, right? The first iPad Pro with this design language came out in 2018. And the iPad Air is like not the lowest end model. It's kind of the mid-range model. So I think it makes sense for it to adopt the same design language, just like how the XR adopted the design language of the iPhone X. Back in the day when it was introduced.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think it's likely that it will happen.
Yeah. And for our final pick, or for my final pick, which is also our final pick, I think we need some kind of AirPods prediction. You know, like, we love AirPods. We use them all the time. We talk about them all the time. And when was the last AirPods introduced? It was the AirPods Pro, right?
Yeah, I think so.
And I believe that that was in 2019. I mean, it's really hard to tell with times these days with, you know, everything that's going on in the world. But yeah, it was a while ago. So I think we're going to see some form of next generation AirPods product. It can be the new AirPods Studio. It can be a new version of the AirPods Pro. But it can't just be like, you know, here's a lower cost version of something that already exists, or is the same form factor with, you know, some new feature. It needs to feel like this is a new generation of AirPods. Is that okay, that kind of bet?
Yeah, so they have to announce, like, it has to be AirPods something. You mean, that's what you mean? Like, it has to be like AirPods Studio or AirPods Solo or whatever. It can't just be like, oh, there's this new AirPods and the battery lasts longer.
Something in the middle of that, like, it can be, of course, the new AirPod Studio. That would definitely be a new generational product. But it can also be like if they say, like, these are the new AirPods Pro and they have like these four features or something that is like a generational shift. Not just like it has better battery life, not just like a spec bump. So, for example, you know, when they introduce a new iMac and we say like, oh, this is the new iMac, or versus when it's just like it got a slightly faster CPU.
Yeah, cool. I'm fine with that.
Cool. And I'm going to bet I like the number 3. So I'm going to stick with 3 points on that.
All right. I'm not feeling this one. I'm going to go against you just because it doesn't feel like this would be the moment for that to happen.
All right. Interesting. All right. So those are our bets for next week's Apple keynotes. So overall, Rambo, what are your thoughts about the event? Are you excited? What do you think about it? Do you have any closing thoughts on it?
What I'm thinking this year about the event is that now that we've gone through the WWDC event, which was a big question mark as to what the format was going to be like and what the event was going to be like, I think we now know what it's like, and it's probably going to be fairly similar in terms of format. But I'm super excited because the production value of WWDC was really good, and I can't wait to like watch these new hardware announcements in beautiful 4K on my OLED TV. I think that's going to be amazing, just like the WWDC events. And also, there is a bigger element of surprise than in previous years. Even though there are all of these rumors, nothing is super confirmed, or we don't know. We know what's going to happen in the near future, but we don't know what's going to be included in this particular event. And I think that's what's fun about it.
Yeah, I think that's a very good way of summarizing it, is that it's kind of hard to tell what the scope of the event will be and how they will kind of package it all up. Yeah. Like, will it be pitched as a wearables event, as an accessory event, as a workout event? Like, we don't really know, right? Will they throw in some Macs there? Will they throw in some iPhones in there? Will it be one huge event with everything? Like, nobody really knows, and that's what makes it so exciting.
Definitely.
So we thought that since this is episode number 100, we should also finish it with just reflecting a little bit back on the past 100 episodes, because we've been doing Stacktrace now since the 15th of March 2018.
Wow.
That was when we released episode number 1. And of course, we've iterated a lot on the format since then. We've tried different things. We brought in a lot of special guests, and we've had a lot of fun, and we've also enjoyed like hearing feedback from all of you listeners and doing Ask Stacktrace and all those things. So we thought that would be fun to just reflect a little bit on also what we've been up to during these years and kind of how our situation has changed. But before we get into that, Rambo, like, do you have any overall reflections and thoughts on Stacktrace since we did that first episode?
So this is Stacktrace, a brand new podcast where we're going to discuss Apple news and rumors, but from a developer's perspective. My name is John Sundell.
And I'm Guy Rambo. Well, I'm just super happy that we've reached 100, because this is, as we mentioned before, a milestone for podcasts. And it's the first podcast I'm in that's reaching 100 episodes. So that's significant, and it's a project that we do together, so it's just the two of us. And of course, now we have the support of the folks at 9to5Mac, which is great, but the production of the show is all in our hands. So it's a really, really great and gratifying to be doing something every week and delivering some piece of content every week. I think there's a level of satisfaction in doing this that's really cool, and I really love it.
Yeah, me too. And I think now with the recent episodes, we've hit a nice format, and the feedback we've gotten from you listeners, it seems like you enjoy it as well. It's like a mix between what's going on in the news and what are we up to? What are we working on? And kind of using our work as well to discuss technology, programming, doing deep dives and those kind of things, which, you know, we always love to do. It's like when you're working, especially if you're working on your own, like when you're working on AirBuddy, Rambo, when I'm working on my games and my other projects, you know, it's not that it gets lonely necessarily, but you have to solve a lot of problems and think about a lot of things on your own, right? And it can be really nice just to talk about those things and share them and share the learnings from them and share the process, because so many times we just present the finished product, whether that's an article, whether that is an app, whether it's a workshop or client work or whatever it might be. But it's also nice to hear kind of behind the scenes what kind of thinking went into it and how did we reach that conclusion, like with the model code dilemma that I was talking about in the beginning of this episode. So we hope that we can continue to share these kind of things with you, because I think it's super fun to share it, and I think it also makes for an interesting discussion as well.
Yeah, sometimes you just need to like vent your frustrations or talk about this really cool solution you found to something, or talk about a really weird bug, which I think I will have one for the next episode. We talked about one previously that I had during the Airbuddy beta, and I think I have another one which is going to be really cool to talk about. And yeah, having the podcast is a great way to just put it out there and share my thoughts with people, and so that other people can also get access to this information and see that they're not alone sometimes.
Yeah, exactly. That's so true. And sometimes when we are facing these issues, it can feel like we are facing them like you're the only person facing it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that's typically not the case. So it's always good to share these things with the community.
Definitely.
So like I mentioned earlier, we thought we would take this opportunity just to also reflect on some personal milestones, like some things that have happened and that have shaped the way we work. So we've each picked four things that are not the only four things that have happened to us in 2 years. Hopefully not. But it's some of the most major things. So Rambo, why don't you kick it off and tell us about one thing that you've been doing since Stacktrace episode one.
It was funny because when I was looking at what happened, I was thinking like, oh, this was like March 2018. There hasn't been too much that happened since then, right? And then I started looking and I remember that when we started the show, I had never left the country.
Yeah, that is pretty crazy, yeah.
Yeah, and I left the country quite a few times after that, as our listeners will know, and as you'll know, I think we've met in at least 3 occasions in these international trips I've taken. I don't have, actually, this is something that I should have. I should probably compile something, but I don't have like a full list of my conference trips and things like that, but I've been to like Spain, the US, Canada, and Switzerland, France, and lots of other really cool places. So yeah, that was a big milestone for me, because before then, my experience speaking was local, so I had spoken at local conferences, but never at international ones, and it's been one of the things I miss the most during this year, I was planning on doing less speaking this year, and now I was basically forced to do that because you can't travel outside the country anymore. I mean, not even within the country, at least you should avoid it here. So yeah, I can't wait for all of this to be over so I can go back to speaking at conferences. I am going to do some virtual stuff later this year, but it's not the same thing. Like the best thing about attending a conference is actually going to the conference and meeting people in real life.
Yeah, and it's a really nice way to see other countries too, because at the conference, you will typically meet a lot of people from that country, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like when you go to NS Spain, you will meet a lot of people from Spain and they can tell you what to do there, right? And they can show you around and they can introduce you to different kind of food and different places and things like that. So I always love that way of traveling, like to see a new country, to meet new people, to meet local developers, to just have a lot of interesting conversations, both about technology and programming, but about all sorts of other things as well. So I definitely miss those trips a lot as well. But yeah, hopefully once the pandemic is over, we can go back and start seeing each other at these conferences again.
Yeah, we have so many poker prizes to pay that haven't been
exactly
paid yet.
There's going to be one lucky restaurant that's going to cash in on all of those.
Yeah.
Awesome. So for my first milestone, I'm going to start with a big one. And that's on the 1st of January, 2019, I went indie. I chose to stop working as a full-time freelancer and instead kind of flip the switch and say, instead of doing podcasting and writing and working for the community, working on open source as a side project, to make that my main project and then to kind of treat the freelancing as my side project. So I've been still doing freelancing since then. So I'm not just kind of doing the indie stuff as the only thing I'm doing, but that's my main focus. So it's been my main focus for almost 2 years at this point, or at least 1.5 years, working for the Swift community. And it's been wonderful, really. It's been really, really nice. Of course, kind of during now during the pandemic, it's been more difficult than during other times. But it's in general very gratifying. It's a lot of fun. I love interacting with the community all the time and getting a lot of feedback from people, and also just trying to contribute as much as I can and to make the Swift community a nicer place for everybody. That's at least what I aim to do. And it's been a lot of fun to do that, and I hope that I can continue for a long time going forward.
Yeah, the 1st of January is a great date to start something, right? Because it's very easy to remember.
Exactly, yeah. It's like you started on that new year. And it was a great also because I was finishing up a freelancing project, and then I could choose, should I take on another one? But then I chose instead to go full-time with my community work, which, is awesome. But of course, I'm still doing freelancing, and I'm still doing a lot of development and things like that on the side. So I'm still keeping up with things, but it's nice to have that extra time and focus to be able to dedicate to things like this.
Yeah. Well, I've done something similar but different and turned around, kind of. So that's life, folks. It changes. Go figure. So our listeners will probably remember I tried to quit my job, but they wouldn't let me because they didn't want me to go, and I kind of really didn't want to go either, so I started working part-time at my job, and this happened also between the first StackTrace and now, and after that, more recently, I actually became a manager, which is different, so it's something I've never done before, and I've been enjoying doing something like this, which kind of sounds like the opposite, like I was doing part-time, but then I moved to manager, which means I'm kind of full-time. But at the same time, since I'm not coding as much for the job, it leaves a lot of coding brain left for my own projects, which is great.
Exactly. Coding energy is definitely a thing. There's only so much code you can write during one day. So it's always nice to, if you want to work on side projects, to also like have time when you're not coding at work so that you have more coding energy for your side projects.
Yeah, because as we talked about before, when you're doing management type stuff, you're mostly working with communication, basically. So you're exchanging messages and figuring things out and architecting stuff, but not actually getting your hands dirty and writing a lot of code, which I still do quite a bit, but probably more than most managers, but it's encouraged at the company. But I'm doing way less than I did before. And of course, it leaves more coding energy left for my own stuff.
Yeah, it's also one of those things where you want to progress in your career, right? And different people progress in different ways. And it's not that, you want to leave coding behind, but it's that you might want to use those skills that you've accumulated in a different way. So for example, to work more on like higher level problems like architecture and how do we move the product forward and things like that. And then do coding in different contexts. For example, like when you're working on Chibi Studio and Airbody and so on.
Exactly.
Cool. So speaking about code, my next milestone is that I launched Swift Bisonel 2.0. And also along with it, I'm going to combine two of my milestones here. I also released my suite of static site generation tools for Swift. All of that between September and December of last year, 2019. So nice. That was a really big journey for me during the whole of last year. And it really was made possible by the fact that I started working full time on my own stuff on the 1st of January, where I had more time now to invest in projects like the published suite of tools and my new website, which I really couldn't do when I was working full time as a freelancer. So I built the static site generator from scratch. I built a new website from scratch. And it's been live now for more than a year, and I must say I'm really, really happy with it. It's been performing really well. Having a static site has worked out really well, and I was a little bit scared in the beginning if it would mean that publishing would have more overhead than when I could just log into Squarespace, paste in my markdown, and hit publish. And that really hasn't been the case. I've been able to publish a lot of things, sometimes almost every day, sometimes a few times per week, and it's been really smooth. And It seems like the website has been really well received by the community as well, and a lot of people enjoyed the upgrade to 2.0 and the new design and so on and so forth. And of course, with Publish, I've been really kind of blown away by the uptake in the community, and I'm seeing new websites being released almost every day using Publish, which is super cool to see. I'm just really happy about that.
Yeah, I also love it. And of course, I also released my own blog using it. And the thing you mentioned about the workflow is definitely true. I think it's perfect for developers, especially those who are already familiar with Swift, because it's the things you're used to doing. And after you get everything set up, it's very simple. I actually have a tiny little bash script which does both publish and also publishes to Cloudflare worker sites, which is what I'm using. And yeah, it's very cool. And it's my default solution now whenever I have to create like even like a simple website, like the Afterlife Sharecuts website that I've done when I shut the service down. It's using Publish because it's so easy to have a static website with all of the benefits of a static website, but at the same time, be able to write logic to define what goes into the end product, which is really great without having to use like some language I'm not familiar with.
Yeah, exactly. And that was really the goal, to enable Swift to be used in this context and to feel like a good fit for it as well, so that it wasn't just like, oh, let's just use Swift for the sake of it, but rather let's create a tool that feels like a really proper native Swift tool, but as a static site generator. And yeah, I've just been really happy to see like the general reception of these tools of the new website by the community. So yeah, I'm going to keep iterating on them. I haven't been able to spend as much time on like the open source projects themselves lately. So that's something I'm hoping to fix in the next coming months to, yeah, make sure all pull requests get merged and that all feedback gets addressed. That's just something that happens sometimes with open source, but I'm hoping to get back to that. But yeah, it's been a lot of fun.
And speaking of releases, I have released between the first Stacktrace and now my most successful product to date, which is our beloved AirBuddy.
Yeah, the best buddy.
Yeah, and of course, as our listeners know, I'm in the process of doing the 2.0 right now, which is doing great so far. And it's been a really big project. And again, I'm always amazed at how big it has become, given that I started with as like a side project for myself and released it just because I noticed that people really wanted it. But it was really, really surprising how good it did.
Yeah, that became a really huge hit. And that was just awesome to see. And it's, yeah, it doesn't feel like that happened between episode one and now. It feels like you've been working on AirBuddy for much longer. But I guess that's just like, just how popular it's become, that it feels like one of those things that's been around forever, even though it really hasn't.
Yeah, that's true. So I launched it, I think it was like the 20th of January 2019. So yeah, a year and a change ago. So it was really nice, and I'm happy with what it's done so far. And I'm sure version 2 is going to do even more, as you know.
Yeah, exactly. So my final milestone is that I moved to a new city. I moved from Krakow to Gdansk, where I live right now. And yeah, that was quite a big adventure as well to move. It wasn't as big as when I moved from Sweden to Poland. Like moving between countries was definitely bigger.
Yeah.
But it was still a big adventure. And yeah, I'm just really happy now in this new city that I'm living in. And things are great. So that is also a big milestone for me.
Yeah, nice. And it's also quite a bit of work, even when it's just within the country. I'm actually, and this is going to be in our 200th episode, hopefully as one of my milestones, but I'm actually in the process of moving right now. I'm not moving very far. I'm actually moving very close to where I live right now, just like moving places. But it's an interesting process.
Yeah, it really is. And it's one of those things that you can't really solve with software, right?
Exactly.
Like you need to actually move your physical things. You need to decorate your apartment. You need to, you know, depending on the state of it, you might need to do a lot of work around the house. And, you know, I've had to learn a lot of things during these past couple of months because we moved and then kind of the pandemic hit and the lockdown started. So we had to do all of the housework we wanted to do ourselves. And we were still planning to do most of it ourselves because we wanted to learn. But now we really had to learn during a pandemic, right? That was kind of an interesting thing to do, to learn how to, you know, do some remodeling around the house and these kind of things. Buy a lot of tools, not software tools, but actual hardware tools. That was fun. So yeah, it's been quite an adventure.
DIY by Sandell.
Exactly. That's the next website.
Yeah, nice. So we'll see what happens in episode 200.
Yeah, we will. Let's see if we can keep going for 100 more episodes. If you keep listening, then we will keep podcasting. So that's been really cool. And thanks so much to everybody for listening, both those of you who have listened to all the 100 episodes, those of you who just started listening with this one. Thanks a lot for listening. Thanks, of course, to Concepts, our great sponsor for this episode. And we hope that you enjoyed this one, this pretty special episode where we both reflected on things we've done and speculated about the future. So all that remains to wrap up this episode is to ask you to say goodbye, Mr. Rambo.
Goodbye, Mr. Rambo. All right, so I'm kind of surprised you didn't pick this one because it's, I think, fairly likely, I would say, pretty much confirmed given what we've seen. I was picking the wrong one. Let me do it again.